Connecticut Democrats, or Connecticrats, as they have never been called.
Welcome to Connecticrats, the CT Dems podcast. I'm David Kostek.
And I'm Tara Kamen.
Coming out of the national convention, all eyes are on the top of the ticket. I got to tell you, the races that sit just below the top of the ticket for United States Senate around the country and House here in Connecticut are also on the top of my mind. Earlier this week, Johanna Hayes released her first ad of the campaign season. Have you seen it?
I have taken a look at it, and it is such a great ad. I really like the fact that her husband had a chance to speak on her and her amazing qualities and really emphasize how real they are as Connecticut constituents and how that realness and like that relatability factor is going to make her a much better representative.
Let's give it a listen. I do wish we had a visual medium at this point, but we don't. But the people living in the Fifth, I think you'll be seeing this on TVs, phones, and streaming devices near you. This is Johanna Hayes' first ad of the 2024 season.
In the Hayes House, we're committed to service. I'm proud to say I've served in law enforcement for over 27 years. Johanna's a teacher, National Teacher of the Year, in fact. She's taken that commitment to Congress, fighting to keep guns out of schools, safe drinking water for our kids, and making investments in our communities. We can relate. Our family has been through the same thing yours has. That's why we need Johanna Hayes' voice in Congress.
That is the reminder that it's not how you start, it's how you finish.
I'm Johanna Hayes, and I approve this message.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is the reintroduction to voters, and for those that don't know, Johanna is that person. I have always been impressed at events that we do, at times I've had the opportunity to meet her. She stays and talks to every single person. She's so directly engaged and so personable. You can see how those sort of classroom experiences of relating to kids translates into her work now in talking to each and every individual. She's fantastic. Love her, and that ad does her a very great service. Whether or not that translates into votes, we'll have to see. One thing that we'll do it is door knocking and canvassing. A lot of that is going on around the state. Do you have any sense of where this race sits and how things are going? It's very hard to tell, isn't it?
It's really challenging, especially because there's no polling available. But I do think that based on the energy that I've seen, and then also hopefully some energy that's coming down from the top of the ticket, she will be able to pull off this race.
Last time it was a margin of 2,004 votes, just over 2,000 votes in you know, a district that represents around 700,000 people. So it was razor thin, not the tightest in the country, but one of the tightest four or five in the country. My gut feeling on this is that it's going to be down to the wire again. It'll be the last one we know about while we sit on pins and needles and wait for states like Arizona and Nevada to come in. We'll still be looking for results coming out of cities in the 5th District to hopefully see Johanna prevail in this race. And of course, the College Dems, they did a round of endorsements recently. So what other races around the state are you guys keeping an eye on?
We had a wonderful opportunity to talk to Robert Blanchard, who is a younger candidate. Actually, it was really nice for me that when we did the interview with him for the endorsement, he was on a train using public transportation to get to his work, and made it a real big point to mention that, you know, him and his wife share one car, like a lot of young people have to do because of rising housing costs and all those kinds of things. So I really liked how down to earth he was about that. And he definitely got our endorsement. He definitely appealed to a lot of what I think the future of Connecticut is looking for, including better funded schools, making sure that the cost of schools in Connecticut isn't too high, and encouraging all the young people to stay within the state as much as possible by providing them with the resources that they need to thrive.
And that race is in the 28th Senate District. It starts in Fairfield and kind of runs northward through Easton into Newtown and a piece of Bethel, I think. So that is definitely going to be one of the tightest races around the state. Who else did you guys look at?
Nick Menapace, who was another great person that we interviewed. He had some anecdotes about being a politically active person in college, which I thought was really funny. And he also was an elected member of the East Lyme Planning Commission, which I thought was kind of an interesting background to go into becoming a state representative. Another part about him that I really liked is that he's been like an educator and a teacher for over a decade. So I always think that there should be more teachers being representatives because they have such a good connection to the community.
Last time he ran in that same seat in 2022, it was a super close race, just about 3 or 4 points distinguishing him from his opponent. I do wonder if this time around they'll see a little bit of a bounce because of this energy and enthusiasm that we're feeling from the top of the ticket. Is it real? Is it going to translate to more people taking the trip out to the polls on November 5th or early voting? Don't forget, we also have early voting for 2 weeks. Are we going to see more people voting this time around?
I definitely think that there's going to be more people voting. I think there is a lot more at stake in this election, and both the Harris campaign and also all the other local campaigns, I think this year particularly, have been really good at messaging how critical this election year is. And I do believe that that will translate to voter turnout.
Well, we certainly felt the energy coming off of the national convention. In just a minute, we'll hear from a panel of 4 or 5 people from Connecticut who were at the convention as delegates or as members of the various committees of the convention. But before we do, as someone who did not go to Chicago but watched it on TV, I assume, you know, night after night, you were watching at least a little bit. Well, what's the vibe you felt? What is the energy you felt? What stood out for you from watching convention coverage?
There were a couple parts of the convention that I think made them prime for being consumed through media, because of course the convention is for the delegates, but also in a big way, it's also for people consuming it throughout the media. So I think the visuals of the balloons and the signage was really great. I saw many TikTok videos and Snapchat photos of the entire stadium and how colorful it was and how much energy there was visually. I saw some clips of Coach Walls giving a pep talk to the Democrats, which I think did a really good job at, and he as a whole does a good job at fighting back on this right-wing narrative that Democrats are elitist or whatever by focusing on, you know, just being a coach and telling people to just get in the trenches and do the work and all that kind of stuff. Another notable speakers that I really liked was the Obamas. I think they spoke in a way that they wouldn't have been able to if they were still in the White House. I think they were a little bit more stripped back and raw and honest about how they felt about everything that was going on. And now that I think the Obamas are almost like the matriarch and patriarch of the Democratic Party, it was great to see them come out and give their truth that they've been keeping in for a while, because I don't think they've had a chance to speak to a crowd like this in a while.
A lot of people observed the stark difference between Michelle Obama's 2016 speech, notable for its when they go low, we go high refrain, and this one where, to put it mildly, she wasn't playing around. She was not there to give a feel-good speech on moral high ground. It was in the trenches, let's fight this thing out, and her refrain of do something really landed with the delegates. I can tell you that.
One of the lines that was clipped and put on social media that I really enjoyed seeing was the affirmative action of generational wealth, which I think was such a smart way to reframe something that has been taken so far by the Republicans and really bring it back to the common sense of, without affirmative action, you're affirming a different kind of...
That social promotion, right.
Social promotion and that kind of thing. So that was really cool to see. I also thought that Doug Emhoff did a really, really good job. And another clip that was on social media a lot was his son getting very emotional at his speech and standing up and clapping for him, which I think really made people feel like, that was Tim
Gus Walls. Yeah, it was Gus Walls.
Yeah. But I was going to say that I think that moment of like him standing up and clapping for his dad, for Tim Walls, made him feel like a good dad, which I think is like such a popular thing for people to see through social media and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, with Doug Emhoff's speech, how badly do you want to hear that voicemail? He was telling the story of the first time he called Kamala before their blind date to sort of introduce himself and ask her out or whatever it was.
At 8 a.m., he left her a rambling voicemail.
That's right. It's like an 8 a.m. rambling voicemail. And apparently on their anniversary, which, by the way, was the night she accepted the nomination for president, the rest of us just can't produce an anniversary gift like that. Like, it really throws the rest of us in to the wolves there. But that apparently she plays that voicemail that she saved, which is sort of wonderful. Part of me wondered if on Thursday night we were going to hear a piece of it, but that's okay. That's their thing. They can keep their thing. They can keep
private or whatever, I guess.
That's right. All right. So we did sit down. Grace, Carlos, and I sat down and talked with some people from Connecticut who were at the convention, a few delegates. Jameem Davis of Bridgeport, State Representative Josh Elliott, who was there as a delegate as well, along with Megan Kehoe from Colchester, who was on the Rules Committee of the convention and also attended. And of course, Grace and I were out there as well. So we all sat down and reminisced and gave you a little bit of behind the scenes from the Democratic National Convention here on Connecticrats. So I feel like this is the first day when I'm back to normal with some sort of sleep schedule. It has been brutal, and we're recording this on Monday. Man, did it take you guys like 4 or 5 days to catch up?
Yeah, I'm still not caught up.
Yes, absolutely. I don't think I'm caught up either, but I tried my best today.
Let's go around. If you had to pick a highlight of the week, what would you do? I'll save myself for last. But Megan, what do you think was a highlight for you?
My highlight was Governor Walz saying never underestimate a public school teacher. Like, as a public school teacher, that memory will be seared in my mind for the rest of eternity. The screeching that I did when he said that, it's really cool. Teachers are the backbone of our country in many ways, and it was just incredible to know that someone who understands what being a teacher is truly like, someone who has met his wife sharing the choir classroom to teach history, like, it's just, that's super cool. He knows what teaching is like, and he is going to be our next vice president. So I will never forget his speech and the fact that I have someone who understands what my life is like in that office.
I used to be a high school teacher before I got into politics for 10 years. And it amazes me that at the same time that he was teaching his social studies classes and coaching football, I was teaching my math classes and coaching cross country. And yet here I am doing a podcast for Connecticut Democrats. And here he is running with Kamala Harris for the vice presidency of the United States. Where did I go wrong? What did I do wrong?
All right, give it time. You still have time to be vice president. Give it time.
I'm old for a digital director, but young for a politician. There you go. Jameem, what was a highlight for you that week?
I mean, there were so many, but I think the thing that really pushed me over the top was when we were at our breakfast and Letitia James came.
Oh, yeah.
And she lit up the room. And it was so emotional for me because I was living in New York many years ago. I had went to Pratt Institute and sometime after I graduated, it must have been around 2003, 2004, or whatever, she was running for city council.
Really?
And yes, she was running for city council, and she was standing outside of the G train at like Clinton and Washington, which is this G train, you know, the stop where nobody really goes, you know, and she asked for my vote, and I voted for her. And I've watched her ever since. And so when she came into that room and she spoke, I was just so proud, you know, and I was filled with emotion. And then I was able to speak with her afterwards and take a photo. And that was something that was just really, really special to me because, you know, we work on these campaigns, you know, for people who are running for city council and the school board. And, you know, it's really inspiring just to you know, have witnessed her rise and to bring back, you know, some hope to people who are just out here trying to do their best to improve our democracy on a local level. So that was amazing.
For some of the listeners, while you watched, may have watched the convention in the evenings, delegates from each state have these breakfasts every morning. And that's what you were talking about. And we invite various people to come. So we had James Carville come to speak to ours. And as Jameem mentioned, Letitia James, the Attorney General of New York, a whole host of people come through the breakfast. And that's just another sort of cool behind the scenes aspect of what went on that week when we were all out in Chicago. Josh, what do you remember? Probably a lot since you were part of the leadership on the floor. But what moment from the week is really a core memory?
Similarly to Jameem, it was the last day when I got to get a picture with Elizabeth Warren, mm-hmm. only because my political ideology stems from a lot of her public comments before she even got elected. And so I was just ecstatic when she ran. I was really hoping that she would run in 2016. One of the reasons I even got involved in politics was because even though she didn't run, Bernie was the closest thing to her in terms of that race. So just getting to talk to her for seconds, I mean, it was like maybe 5 seconds, but just getting to express that I've been elected and the only reason I'm here is because of, I think, in some salient way, the work that she does. And then I nudged myself to the front table so I could just be like on top of the podium that last day when we had like 20 amazing speakers. Although half the time I wasn't even there because I was always going to the back to wait in line to meet with somebody. So I was just like running back and forth to see all the people that I really wanted to see. And then being like 5 feet away with like from Pete Buttigieg was just totally surreal. The whole thing was just surreal.
And Grace?
For me, I feel like one of my highlights, a similar like intimate moment, was during the Women's Caucus when Governor Wall spoke, because me and a few other young Dems, like, we got there super early. We were right there in the front row. So when he got there, like, we were able to be right there in front of him and see him. And like, it was just really cool because in the evenings, like, we're sitting in the stands, so we're not as close. And it felt like we were having like a more intimate conversation with him. And he was speaking to us, and it was more of a conversation rather than us just like listening to a speech. So it was really cool because I don't know if I'll ever get a chance to have intimate moment with a vice president like that ever again. So that was definitely my highlight.
For me, it was on Monday night when Kamala Harris sort of surprised me and I think the world and came out on stage on Monday. That's not how these things are scripted. Usually, like, it's waiting for Godot. You wait for the big moment where at the end Thursday, you know, the nominee comes out and blows the roof off the place, which she also did. But on Monday, it was absolute, like, when she walked out on stage and that place erupted. I assume that played on TV properly. But my gosh, when she came out on stage, I was like stunned and grappling for my camera as fast as I could and tried to remember that moment. For me, that was it. That was sort of our highlights. But let's talk a little bit about the sort of mechanics of what people might not necessarily know. The sign game. Oh my gosh! So when you guys are watching on TV, you probably noticed that all of a sudden when Doug Emhoff speaking, everybody's got a red sign that says Doug. Or when Jill Biden was speaking, everybody's got a green sign that says Jill, and like signs on post for Coach Walls or whatever else. Can someone explain how that happened?
Yeah, it was kind of hilarious because we knew when signs were coming, like, because we were kind of near the stairs. So we knew where the volunteers had the signs, and we were like ready, waiting, like, where's our signs? Where's our signs? And, a couple of us sometimes like leaned over the railing and was like, you can give it to us now. Like, and, you know, we're really into and wanted our signs. It's really funny, actually.
So my very important job for the campaign was to be next to the telephone, which 3/4 of the time I'm confident was not working. We also had a private chat with the campaign. When I say the campaign, it was this guy, Michael. And then we were talking with Deborah, who was with the DNC off to the side, making sure the stairs were clear and making sure that people could get by. And then it was the two captains, Melissa and Jason. But basically, we were getting a call like every half hour saying, all right, when, you know, Kamala says this, you all are going to chant this. And so that was coupled with the sign. So it was pretty interesting to see how the entire room all together sort of seemed like they knew what they were doing. I thought that it was pretty, like, it was interesting how it was coordinated. That was the extent of my power. That was the extent of my responsibility.
You did such a good job. You did such a good job with those texts being like, and now say this. And when they say this, you say this.
I didn't need to prompt us for the when we fight.
We win.
That was great. I like those. And I liked when somebody booed during Obama's speech. One section booed and he had it ready. Don't boo, vote. That was what was going on in sort of our level. And then one night I was up in the 200 or 300 level. So if you think about it, it was a basketball arena, right? This is where the Bulls play basketball. And there's the 100 level seats, the 200 and the 300. And so there are different passes. And I don't want to get into all of that. But one day I gave up my floor pass so somebody else could enjoy that one evening. And I went up to the 300 level. And it's a slightly different experience. Megan, I think most of the time you were up in the 300 level, right?
Yeah, I was at 200 and 300 level. The signs was very similar, except the last night our section didn't get the signs. And like everyone was like desperate. Like, where are our signs? We could see everyone else had them. And then finally they came over. And then the same thing happened with the American flags. We're like, we need our American flag. So that was funny. It is funny how like attached we all got and excited we all got for yet another piece of paper. And then we all obviously, you know, tucked them into our airport bags and figured out a way to bring them all home because it's like a piece of history. You see them, you know, in all the videos and history books. And now we were actually there holding those signs. I think, Dave, though, the biggest part, the coolest thing about being in the 300 and 200 section was meeting all the different people from all over the world, like, or not world, sorry, all over the country. Like, although there were people, there were delegates from like Paris, there were people from, you know, abroad, but meeting people from Oklahoma, I met a state senator from Oklahoma who was joking around with me because she used to be a teacher and I'm a teacher about how, well, how would you use the Bible in schools? And I was like, well, that's not real, right? Like, that's just a headline that we all say to get liberals riled up. Like, I genuinely thought that was, you know, something that Republicans were pushing for, but that Democrats were using as propaganda to get people riled up. Not true propaganda, but, you know, just a headline. And she goes, oh, no, that's real. She's like, I'm a Democrat in Oklahoma, and my teaching friends need to use the Bible in their lessons. And I was like, oh, like genuine. And then that adds weight to the 2025, Project 2025, because when you're hearing from these other people who live in very different states than Connecticut, and you're hearing that what they're saying, the headlines from those states are genuinely happening, and your average math teacher and English teacher in Oklahoma need to use the Bible in their lesson, it makes Project 2025 hold more weight to me. Like, I realized this is not just propaganda. This isn't just to get people riled up. This is genuine stuff that's happening across our country. And all of these other people sitting around us, like 300, we were all, I had a woman from Puerto Rico, I had a woman from Oklahoma, Arkansas, all different people, and hearing their stories about what their policies are like in their area and how their elections are run and everything just really like made Project 2025 hold more weight for me because it really helped me realize how real it is. It's easy for us in Connecticut to just feel like it's a headline because we're so removed from those type of policies, but it's real. And that was the coolest part of sitting in the, you know, 200s and 300s was throughout the entire thing, having conversations with people from all over the country.
I'm going to take this a slightly lighter direction. Sorry, Megan. So I was there with my girlfriend the first few days, and she had a floor pass. I, as a delegate, could sit with the delegate section for Connecticut. And I was up on the third floor when Kamala came out the first night. So I was off to the side, and I kind of saw almost behind her. And the scope was such, I mean, she just looks so tiny. And so obviously we spent the majority of the time looking at the Jumbotron, but then when I was with the rest of the delegates, we were closer being on the first floor, but I still spent like, I don't know, 80% of my time looking at the Jumbotron anyway. So I'm not sure, like, yes, it was different because we're a little bit closer and you feel like you're a little bit more part of it, but I don't know how much more. And so I thought that was kind of like almost nice. It made everybody sort of be on the same page. Unless you're Californian, in which case you're like on top of the stage, basically.
Yeah, I noticed that looking around, Josh, because I was, as the guy who was photographing the delegation, I got a lot of pictures of everybody with the necks bent backward and looking up. Everybody's looking up. So when you look at the delegation photo, it's like, what's everybody looking at? What's up there? How many balloon drops could there have been? No. We were basically there watching TV.
Except, you know, on the last day, I had gotten this invite to go to the, quote, penthouse, like where those private suites were.
Really?
And they were far up. So, like, they had food and like real alcohol, you know, up there. And I go up there and I was like, this is nice. And you sit in this little suite and all these cushy chairs. And honestly, like 5, 10, 15 minutes, I was like, I'm going to go back to my seat because it wasn't fun. It like, you know, it wasn't as fun as being with our delegation on the floor, getting our signs, screaming and yelling, like being excited and with people. And up there, like you couldn't see anything. Like people were really, really tiny on the stage. So like, I think we had like the best seats in the house because up there was just like, okay, I'll have a drink, but then I'm out.
Can we have a first world problem conversation about how we couldn't go to any parties because every single night went so late? And by the time the day was done, almost all the parties that did exist were pretty much over. The food at the convention center was just about the worst imaginable. And there was no booze available for normal people, Jameem.
I know. Well, listen.
Invited to penthouse suites.
Listen. When I got there on Monday, I was fully expecting to have like a drink, go to my seat, like, you know, whatever. And I go out there and I'm like, where's the drink? I expected to pay $25 for it. Like I was at a baseball game or a basketball game or something like that. But I just couldn't believe that there wasn't anything. So when I got to go into the like special section, I was like, how did this happen? Why did they get alcohol?
And the last day, they ran out of water. There was like hours where delegate protesters were walking around. So like our constitutionals can go back and forth. So if you had to go to the bathroom, you were like told that you could go, but you might not be able to come back in. The buses took so long to go back and forth. And if you wanted to leave at the end of the night and you want to take an Uber, it was a $60 Uber. So that's it. Those are all my complaints just in one quick go.
I did leave my seat on that last night and went outside and I did get stuck outside. But, you know, with skills I started honing at skipping classes in high school, I was able to find the weak spot in the entrances. You just keep trying them all. And then I wound up like walking like really an inch behind someone else and just go like as quickly as possible. I can't say no. And snuck myself back in because I was not going to get stuck on the outside hallway when, you know, the whole thing came to a head and Kamala Harris came out.
Absolutely. Well, when I came back from the special seat, there was somebody out there being like, nobody can get back in. And I was like, oh no, I most certainly will get back in. I'm a delegate. Here's my pass. I don't care what you say, but I let my delegation know because I had texted Josh that I would be back. And so now I'm back. And I just went right in.
Kudos to the organizers for keeping the show running and all that. I will say, I personally believe the not selling beer was probably, on balance, a good idea.
100%.
Agreed.
Yeah, you're probably right.
The energy was high enough without it.
Josh touched on the logistics a little bit. So another behind the scenes, there were, you know, buses running from our various hotels to the convention site. And depending on what time you left the hotel and then what happened in between and whether or not they had to shut everything down to bring in a president. And by the way, we actually have former presidents who are willing to show up and invited to show up at the convention. That's a big distinction between us and the Republicans. So when President Obama came in, there's a motorcade and the Secret Service shuts down traffic and that holds up the buses. So there were some issues like that. What's the quickest you got in?
Mine was the Wednesday night was very fast and I got a great seat. And then Thursday night, I got a line before the buses were even there and it still took hours to get in. And by the time I got there, there was no seats and I had to steal a seat from some college kids who were saving it for their friends. So I was sitting in the middle of a crowd of young people who were very unhappy with me. But I was like, sorry.
There's no seat saving. There comes a point when there's no seat saving.
You say Thursday I got in pretty early. Tuesday for sure because Monday, I don't know if I missed the shuttle, but I ended up needing to take an Uber because there was backed up. So I don't know if it ever came, but we were waiting for a very long time. So I was like, I'm not going through this Tuesday. So I got on the first shuttle there and back on Tuesday. And then I did the same thing Wednesday. So that was the fastest for me.
I got pretty lucky with transportation. On Monday night, I guess I took the last good shuttle before everything got shut down a great deal. So while I got held 20 minutes or something, it wasn't that bad. And then regarding lines and stuff, you know, I really only encountered the giant line to get in on Thursday. But that gave me the opportunity to videotape the giant line for a TikTok. So is it a total loss? Maybe not. Maybe not.
The last day I took an Uber with four other people. And when we got dropped off, and I'm not sure if they started doing this on the very first day or they improved over the course of the 4 days, or if I just didn't realize they were doing this, but they did split off the delegates from everybody else and got people in quicker. So we left at 3:15 and we were in line for less than 5 minutes. We was just really quickly through. But the first day we left at 4:15 and we were on the bus for 2.5 hours.
Yeah, that was rough that first night.
Yeah, and then we were in line for 45 minutes or whatever. Yeah, it was a lot. And then of course the show went until midnight, I think it was, that first night. And it was like, yeah. Oh no, this week is gonna be brutal.
Yeah, you could see the teleprompter and see what the speeches were supposed to be versus the speeches people were given. And too many people took some liberties and added too much, and it starts pushing the show back and back and back. By Tuesday night, that wasn't happening. So again, kudos to the organizers and everybody who threw this thing, put this thing together, and sort of the stage management and production and all that stuff was impressive. And when I looked up on Monday night and saw the balloons tied up in the ceiling, I'm like, oh, that's going to be fun. Oh, that is going to be fun. And that's actually another memory. That balloon drop was something.
Yeah, it was just really, it was really fun. It was great. Until it wasn't. Until it was like, all right, we got to get out of here. Like...
So ultimately, this thing is about, you know, building momentum for the candidate, introducing or I don't know if it's reintroducing the candidates to the American public. Certainly, you know, it was an introduction for Coach Walls to the American public, and the moment for Kamala Harris to step out into the spotlight from the traditional vice president role of being, you know, a supporting role. So was it successful?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I think there's a new feeling of hope across the country right now. It's an incredible feeling. I think it wasn't perfect, but I think it was damn near perfect, of people feeling fresh, people feeling hopeful. There was a level of inclusion on so many different levels where, I mean, even just Tim being a teacher, everybody has a teacher that they look back on and say like, oh, that person really made a difference. So it's easy for people to connect with that. But then there were so many other people on the stage, parents, children, like there was someone for everyone to feel like, hey, I look like that. That person's like me in these ways. So I think it's massively huge. I think there was one gap with the lack of a Palestinian speaker. And there was a great Palestinian speaker who, Ruwa Roman. And if you look her up on Instagram, Ruwa Roman, she has the speech that she was going to give. And it's absolutely beautiful. She's been a guest for my Young Dems Club, and she's absolutely fantastic. So like, go give her a listen, because I think that was the only gap of somebody, like a voice that was missing. But besides that, I think, I mean, it brings hope. It brings excitement. Everyone's ready to go and fight and door knock. And I think they did a really good job.
The thing that I was surprised by was how much there seemed to be this overarching intent behind grabbing like images and verbiage from the Republicans, like the focus on freedom, the like all the pictures of like the countryside. I mean, there's a lot of countryside in the U.S., so like I understand that, but it felt very and like the chants of USA and the very obvious patriotism and the American flags everywhere. It felt very much engineered to sort of dismantle the Republican strengths and just take ownership of them. And I also noticed this consistent theme over the course of 4 days of everybody getting one jab in at Trump. And nothing really over the top. I mean, besides Barack's thing, which was like kind of surprising for me, given that he's like the orator of our generation, that was part of his speech. But I didn't have a problem with it. I just thought it was interesting. But everybody who spoke made some sort of comment about how Trump was deficient in a way that wasn't just like what you would see normally. It was really going after what you can imagine that he would find personally discomforting. And so I appreciated that because it felt very well manicured and engineered. And then to finally end by like the hopefulness and joy that, you know, first Oprah kind of like was able to expound on a little bit that this was like, and Michelle Obama, that this was a campaign based on joy. Yes, we should be acknowledging of the fear and of the destruction that Trump would cause. But ultimately, we should be really leaning into the fact that these are like really nice, normal, hardworking, and incredible people at the same time. So everything that it needed to be, I thought it was.
I will say, from the Connecticut Democrats' point of view, we have seen an enormous uptick in volunteerism and every other metric you can imagine. That's really going to help, you know, our close races around the state, and to the degree we can help in other states, that as well. Michelle Obama's refrain of "do something," I think, landed pretty well with the American public, and they're ready to start doing something.
Yeah. I thought it was a magnificent moment for women and for Black women in particular. It's hard to describe the feeling, but, you know, Kamala Harris is a very typical Black woman. You know, she's really down to earth in the way that she speaks, in the way that she moves, in the clothes that she wears, and the, you know, it was just a moment where we were all very clear. We were all very clear about who she is, what she stands for, where she comes from, and how she thinks. And you know, there was an incredible amount of familiarity, you know, with her. And I think that that was amazing for the country to see. And it was like bookended by Hillary and by Michelle Obama, because Michelle Obama came out, when I saw her come out with her ponytail, I was like, she is bringing her whole Black self, and I am here for it. I am here for it, because so often we cannot show up as our full selves, you know? And so to be there and talk about Black jobs and, you know, being a Black woman and, you know, doing things, you know, I don't know. It was just, to me, it was a moment for the country to see, and it was something to really experience. And I don't know that I will feel like that again anytime soon, to see that kind of representation and to be so proud, to be so proud.
We shall see if that convention has a bounce in the polls for Kamala Harris. It usually does. But of course, it coincides with another freakish occurrence in this race. If there's one thing that's been consistent, it's that nothing is consistent. And so RFK Jr., who has provided an enormous amount of comic relief to my political browsing, has essentially withdrawn, although my understanding is he's going to stay on the ballot in a few key states, including Michigan, because of peculiarities of election law. But regardless, he did step back from the campaign and endorse one Donald Trump. Your first reaction when you heard that?
I was just thinking to myself, an environmental activist who is really concerned about people's access to healthcare, and I mean, I don't really necessarily agree with his healthcare concerns, but has concerns about people and healthcare and their safety and wants regulation for those kinds of things, then goes and endorses Trump? Really? And I think there is, of course, some kind of concern of if his supporters are going to move towards Trump, if that's really going to move the needle. But I do want to remind us all, he did only have, I think, about 5% in the polls. And there's been a lot of evidence that the slipping of his support and then the rise of Kamala's support might be correlated in some way. So I really highly doubt that Trump's endorsement is going to tip the needle in any one direction.
There's some early indication that that's the case, that polling done before and after and sort of polling averages. Nate Silver, the prognosticator, removed RFK from the his model, and it had no effect on the outcomes, no measurable effect on the outcomes. So hard to say. I did suspect that he was drawing almost evenly from the two candidates insofar as he was drawing from the two candidates. The wild card becomes the people who wouldn't otherwise vote, who are, you know, somehow excited to come out and vote for RFK. Those people, I don't know how they're going to break. And in a race where maybe 100,000 votes spread across five states could make the difference here, I do worry a little bit. I do worry a little bit that, you know, the guy who drove around in a van with a bear carcass for half a night. And by the way, if you've ever, a lot of Connecticut people have been in and out of New York City and understand the geography of New York City. That story does not add up. If you're at Peter Luger's Steakhouse and you've got to get to either JFK or LaGuardia, or even White Plains to get to a flight, driving back into the city to go to Central Park makes absolutely zero sense. So something is amiss with that whole story. You heard it here first. We're breaking conspiracies here on Connecticut, but we don't have to with this guy. What other story leaps out at you? I'm setting you up. I'm teeing it up for you. Knock it out of the park.
I think the biggest thing is probably the conspiracy about vaccines, and how they cause like learning disabilities and all that kind of stuff. The thing about RFK is that in actuality, I think all of his ideas are deeply unpopular. The only reason why I think he had any sustenance whatsoever was because of like the whole double vote hater voting situation. But I really do think that dynamic has shifted with Kamala entering the race. I'm just hoping the worm in his brain is doing okay, because I don't know how that worm is going to get along with Trump.
So did you hear the most recent animal abuse story of his? Like, the bear isn't the only one now.
Oh, I didn't hear about this.
Apparently, he used a chainsaw to remove the head of a beached whale and strapped it to the roof of his car because he wanted to collect the skull of a whale. And as he was driving it home, the, quote, whale juice kept coming into the car and disgusting his children, who were driving along with him in the car. So anyway, this is the guy who dropped out of the race and is endorsing Trump. So that's what we got at the top of the ticket.
Well, I'm really glad that he dropped out. The one thing that was very interesting to me is how in his speech where he was dropping out, he kept reiterating that he was suspending his campaign and not terminating it. And I just kept thinking to myself, does this guy really think he's going to like kick it back into high gear at some point? Like, why is this not a termination?
I do think it has something to do with the money that you've raised and your capacity to spend or whatever. I think when a campaign is terminated, I think you have more limits on what you can do. So it may just be keeping some flexibility about spending the money. It could be that simple.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense to me. I think on some ways, like I was reading some articles saying that RFK thought that he could work with Trump and kind of compromise with him. But then I still really think to myself, if there's one candidate that you could really compromise with, it would probably be Kamala and not really necessarily Trump. I don't think that he has much room for compromising, especially about the environmental regulations and stuff.
Yeah, no idea what it must be like to try to, quote, compromise or negotiate or whatever with Trump, because, you know, malignant narcissism is a hell of a thing. And when he's going to be in for a bit of a rude awakening. A little closer to home, we've got a number of events to support Connecticut candidates. Starting at the very top of our statewide ticket, Chris Murphy running for United States Senate. Chris is going to be out on Sunday, September 1st, in a couple of towns here in Connecticut to kick off some canvasses. So if you're somebody who wants to lace up those shoes, grab a clipboard and go door knocking, here are two great opportunities. In Meriden at 1 p.m. on September 1st, You can meet, start a Canvas kickoff, not only with Chris Murphy, but with Johanna Hayes. So that's like a twofer. That's a great opportunity. And then a little later in the day, Senator Murphy will be down in the Derby and Sonia area to kick off yet another Canvas in support of the state legislative candidates. So by all means, check out ctdems.org/events for more information and to sign up for those. If knocking doors isn't your thing, we've got phone banks running. We've got all sorts of activities in person happening, along with some fun activities like various barbecues and all that stuff. Again, ctdems.org/events. And of course, it is back to school season, so college Democrats are moving back into the dorms, back into their apartments, back into Connecticut. I assume you guys are going to be firing up some activities as well as we get going into September and October.
Yes, moving in was backbreaking work. I just moved in yesterday, but now that we are all on campus and all here, we are very excited to get going. So stay tuned for any events that we have moving forward.
There's going to be all kinds of opportunities. Please, we need you. Volunteers win elections. And as Michelle Obama said,
do something. We couldn't agree more. See you next week on Connecticrats. Bye-bye.